or see it online at WUSB.FM or see it in Facebook at WUSB Concert Billboard. Service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM, WUSB.FM on the web.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's 3 minutes after 6 o'clock time once again for Off the Wall. A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Kyle.
Hello?
Didn't I say stand by a second ago? That man put all that... All right, what is it that you have there you've been eating all day long?
Hemp plus granola.
Hemp? Granola? Is that legal in this country?
Yeah.
It is, okay.
It's got hemp seeds in it.
Yeah, it's got hemp seeds in it. And yeah, people have such a hang-up over that kind of thing, don't they?
Yeah, well, I'm just getting ready.
But it is legal. I just want to make sure because we're on the FCC.
Well, yeah. In fact, this is in politics right now.
Uh-huh.
Everybody, I know, they are really, really concerned about the Industrial Hemp Act passing. It's in committee right now, and that's about the most important thing going on in politics. And so I'm just supporting industrial hemp, so I thought
industrial hemp? What does that mean? What would this legislation bring to us?
It would allow Americans to grow hemp for industrial purposes, and this is like hemp that doesn't contain psychoactive substances, so it's not like a drug. It's actually like the fiber. You think back like when they used to use it on boats for like rope and sales, or I don't know what they use.
How far back am I thinking?
A long time. Like, isn't the Declaration of Independence on hemp or something? Anyway.
I keep hearing people say that. Yeah.
Point is, it's in committee right now, and everybody's really concerned about it in Washington, D.C.
It's pretty tasty, I'll say that.
And, you know, it's a political season. You gotta get political.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just supporting that and eating some granola.
Now, what does this have to do with marijuana reform? Because I noticed the same people who are into marijuana reform are into hemp legalization, too, or hemp industrial hemp act. So there's no correlation. It comes from the same plants.
Right.
Correct? So
they're different. I mean, medicinal...
Is this maybe a foot in the door so that, you know, those evil people can force children to smoke pot?
I think it does open the door to, like, show people that a plant doesn't... It's not just a bad thing. Like, it's not a negative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely different issues. Like, medicinal marijuana and those kinds of debates, they're different than industrial hemp, because industrial hemp's like clothes or oil, you know,
right?
Food products like protein from the seed, and that kind of thing. And the medicinal, the kind that might be smoked is a different plant. It's actually a different gender plant. It's the flowers. Hemp protein.
The female plant.
Yeah, the female plant. Hemp protein generally comes from the seed, and that happens when the pollen from male plants creates the seed. I believe that's how it works. Or maybe the males make the seeds. I don't know exactly how
okay,
it works.
Okay, are maybe the people in our government, or, you know, or our parents, the policemen, are concerned that if we were growing industrial hemp, might somebody then be able to take that plant and do something with the female plant, and all of a sudden you're smoking a joint? You know, do you think that's the thought process that is going through their heads?
Well, yeah, but when you're growing it for, like, industrial purposes, you're not smoking it. You're processing it. You're making oil. You're making, like I said, protein powder and stuff like that.
Right. They're not. But if I sneak into their fields and I harvest, I mean, what could I do? Is it that easy?
I mean, it is a plant, so it's you're able to grow it.
It's an illegal plant.
Right. Right, but I don't...
I always thought that was just so bizarre that you can make a plant illegal, but...
Right, right. Well, anyway, it just, you're not growing it for the same reason, so it's a different type of growing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not blooming flowers, so you're dealing with a different state of growth.
Right.
And there's actually strains of the seed that don't produce any kind of, like, active substance like THC and stuff like that you find in, like, a medicinal grade stuff. And anyway, it's relatively harmless. I mean, it's not something that's gonna, like, hurt anybody. And basically, it's a resource. Like, paper and a lot of other products can be made out of hemp, and that's why they sell it in the grocery store. They make I think there's other, like...
It's hard to find, though.
Granola bars and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it's hard to find this.
But, you know, I can see your argument. I can see how...
Well, it's not my argument. I'm just...
No, no,
I'm
love you. You're a devil's advocate.
Hypothetical.
No, that's great.
I might be a devil's advocate.
We have to be really fearful that, you know, kids are going to run out into industrial hemp fields and start rolling joints. They probably get really bad headaches or something, but I don't think it's that bad. And there's other countries. There's plenty of other countries that do this. In fact, a lot of hemp is imported from Canada, and generally some products are processed first in England. I know China grows a lot of marijuana. So there's other forms of the plant, like cousins, like camelina is a cousin of the hemp plant, and also... jute. I think a lot of jute is used. That's actually the root from hemp, but it's often made into, like, rope and other forms of fiber, like for clothing and stuff. So I guess it's this policy, like, that any form of this plant in the country is dangerous, and it just speaks to people not being educated. Like, hemp oil and the seeds have a very high concentration of omega-3 fatty acids, something that people are taking, like, fish oil supplements for and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of benefits to it. Yeah, you know, perhaps it's not something we should, you know, be encouraging kindergartners to be doing while they're learning their ABCs and stuff, but definitely there's benefits to certain plants. And this has been going on for ages with a lot of varieties of plants and substances that are used, like, either... medicinally or as a dietary supplement and that kind of thing.
But right, and if I just have another taste of this, thank you, gentlemen. Right now, the plant that created this snack that we're enjoying right now. You can't have that plant in this country legally?
Exactly. Like, you can't grow it on a large enough scale to compete with other crops like cotton and, like, corn and other stuff like that. But and the products that you can make out of hemp are pretty diverse, but you have to import either processed versions, or you have to import the raw forms to process your own, like, fibers or proteins. Like, So that's the deal. Is like, we can't grow it industrially here, so any kind of hemp products are going to be unreasonably expensive because the raw materials have to be imported from a place that doesn't have the same policy towards hemp. Like, we basically say, no, we're not going to have this at all, because in a certain form of it, we can't, we don't want to grow it because it might be considered a drug. And it's sort of it's an odd situation. And I think medicinally, there's a lot of stuff going on too, as far as people changing their attitudes about it. And I think industrial hemp is something where we could look to maybe change our attitude and start having a healthier industry here in the U.S. to eliminate the fact that you have to, like, import it. There's people building.
I'm sorry. This goes off every time we win a gold medal or a medal of any sort, and it's really driving me crazy.
There's people building houses with hemp straw. They're making this stuff called hempcrete, if you can believe it. So
no,
think
I,
of
I,
like
I don't believe
like
that.
Kind of a hippie like living situation, like the straw bale houses. I think is sort of a hippie kind of, like, you build your house out of straw bale. It's like an eco-friendly, like, sustainable form of home. Well, there's people making really tough concrete, but it still, like, breathes and doesn't sort of get moldy and mildewy the way straw bale homes do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually, they're creating products that you can use in, like, architecture that's made out of hemp straw.
Was it in Canada that I heard about houses built with hemp? I think I heard about that there.
It's a Canadian company. There's the straw is grown and then processed in England, and I think they're importing it. There's some people along the East Coast here that are doing, like, sustainable architecture with hemp straw. So it's interesting, and I think they're two different issues, like medicinal use of it and industrial use. But I think the industrial use would definitely help to change people's attitudes, which are also changing, like, for medicinal uses and that.
I hope they do. This is something maybe you could just briefly give me your opinion on, because I've always wondered this. We live in a country where, you know, alcohol is no problem. People still smoke cigarettes, and the cigarette industry is huge, and the companies make tons of money. But for some reason, smoking marijuana is considered a dangerous, evil, a threat. And I just wonder, you know, if you compare what it's like to be drunk and what it's like to be high, the two things are quite different, and one is a lot more harmful than the other. It's been proven over a great amount of time and experiments. Why do you think there is such a fervent opposition to something like marijuana by particularly conservative people? I mean, does it make people more liberal or something when they smoke, or what is it they're afraid of exactly? I cannot figure that out. I mean, it's not like a hard drug.
I think it's a lot of things, E.
Mm-hmm.
I like the culture around it. There's probably a lot of conservatives that are users of marijuana and don't have a problem with someone smoking a joint or something, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be careful not to make, like, a broad generalization about it. But I think,
well, there's conservatives out there that light up. I'd like to hear from you. I really would.
Right.
I just, otw@2600.com. Write to us. Let us know.
Yeah. So I think, It's a culture. There's a culture around it. The fact that it is illegal makes it, there's a lot of stigma. So I think there's this antisocial undertone that sort of has to be a part of it in this country, because mm-hmm. it's illegal and public society considered something that
alcohol,
you know,
is illegal too.
During
prohibition, alcohol was illegal as well.
Yeah.
And it survived that and came roaring back and
uh-huh.
was embraced by all walks of life.
Absolutely.
Almost all walks of life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we're still in prohibition for marijuana, but that's like my opinion about it. But I think that, it takes a lot to change people's attitudes and for them to accept it culturally. So
mm-hmm.
the fact that you have to sort of hide it at all because, you know, technically it's this, that, or the other thing, I think that creates this a bit of secrecy around it, and you know, you want to verify, and like there's you know, you don't know who could be supportive or not. Again, I think the attitudes are changing. You've seen a lot of changes with medicinal use and
yes.
and patients' rights and you know, grow co-ops and
you're
and
seeing
dispensaries
it in
and
states from Washington to New Jersey to Rhode Island.
Yeah.
You're seeing actual medicinal marijuana being used and embraced.
Right.
On the governmental end, and that's,
but it's got
that's
a history
huge.
Of having to be sort of a secret or a closet thing. Just mm-hmm. even it's almost funny now, but you know, you still can get in trouble. You got to be careful and that kind of thing. If you're especially if you're stupid about it mm-hmm. and careless, and I think I don't know. So again, and alcohol has been legal for much longer. Like they sort of figured out prohibition of that wasn't going to work very quickly because, you know, cartels and mobsters, you know, organized crime came into it, mm-hmm. and it just didn't work out. And I think that still, to some degree, goes on. And so it's still in this embroiled kind of tumultuous history that I think a lot of people that care about safe use and safe access. I think they would really love to shed that, but it's still ingrained as something that we discriminate against, and that's been compounded over decades and decades. So, but again, things like this, like industrial hemp, like if people support those products and they want to see more local products, whether it's, you know, from clothing to food to fuel, whatever you're using the plant for, I think they need to support like the Industrial Hemp Act and see all the benefits that, you know, could come about from using it and growing it and making it available locally. We don't have to import it mm-hmm. just to get the benefits of, you know, health or good products or natural products and stuff like that. So
many issues related to this one thing, and a lot having to do with our society, the way we feel about various things, progressiveness, evolution. And, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if I answered what you said about conservatives not wanting to see it, you know.
Well, you said I was wrong, but other than that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about right and wrong on this thing, but it's definitely, I could see people having maybe their own experience. They think alcohol's maybe better regulated because you can't have access to it. At a certain age, but none of that's been tested with marijuana. It hasn't been put on the books. You know, we haven't tried to regulate it or anything. And I think there's people that don't want to see it regulated at all either.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, people that aren't open to it aren't going to be open to it. They're going to build up their own barriers. And you know, maybe if they can try you know, some hand cream or something, uh-huh. or some, you know, granola in there, you know, they'll say like, wow, this isn't all bad, like you could use this.
Exactly. But when you live in a society things. When you live in a society where it's pretty much on the level of crack or heroin or something like that, that's a dangerous drug, and then kids, because their friends are all having joints occasionally, they try and they realize, hey, it's not so bad. What you wind up having are kids saying, well, if that's not so bad, then the next thing that I was told was really bad might not be so bad either, except that thing really is bad, and they shouldn't be plunging into that kind of a world, and you wind up with more people doing more things that they wouldn't have done if they had just been told the truth from the beginning.
Yeah, that has to do with safe access.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, getting, because it is relegated to, like, a black market and that kind of thing, unless it's medicinal or it's, you know, not being grown for consumption like that, like I'm talking about industrial hemp, you know, people are going to be rubbing shoulders with people that have harder and worse, you know, or
yes.
just not even what they are exposing them to substance-wise. How about just the social groups that
yes.
you know, a young person might not have all the experience to kind of deal with? So I think that has to do with safe access and a safe culture around it. And if people change their attitudes towards it and we're a little bit healthier, you know, we look at it as in a spiritual way, as a form of like a way to heal and that kind of thing. I think, and educate people that it can be used safely, you know, that, you know, don't just lump it in as a terrible drug. Like,
But know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Know something about it. Be educated about it, which is more than we're encouraging them to be right now. We're basically just shutting the door and saying, don't even talk about it. Don't even think about it.
Right.
We saw a really good film a week or so ago at the Stonebrook Film Festival called Behind the Orange Curtain.
Yeah.
About prescription drugs and how teens, particularly in Orange County, California, but all throughout the country and probably the world, are becoming addicted to prescription drugs. Very easy to get. They're right in your medicine cabinet many times, or, you know, the parents of a friend or something like that. And that's really kind of crazy, seeing that happening. And again, very little education going on to reach people before they do something stupid.
Yeah, that stuff really opened my eyes. That was scary. I think there was one kid in there that was, he had an addiction, or he had a serious problem smoking pot, but I think he woke up to it eventually, I think passed away or did something stupid. I don't remember the exact storyline, but you know, hopefully people are around people and they get pulled out of that, and that, you know, any of the successes that came out of that movie, I think it was because somebody intervened, somebody saw, somebody talked to somebody,
yeah,
on their level.
Mm-hmm.
Not
that's what you have to do, right? You have to have that intervention on someone's level to reach them
and see that they need, you know, that they're in need of something more, you know, and that they're struggling and acting out as a result.
Yeah, and you have situations where kids are just being medicated left and right with all kinds of things.
Well, yeah, that's
another
thing. That are
just not good for them. And what happens lots of times, you give all this medication to somebody, maybe they don't even use it, they give it to somebody else, or this person's grades improve, so their friend thinks, okay, if I take this, my grades will improve. They become addicted, or they just become a different person based on all that. And there's all of this going on, and we're concerned about smoking joints. You know, it's a lot more serious what's happening right in our homes,
yeah,
with alcohol, with prescription drugs, with things like that, and we're not talking about any of it. Not in ways that kids can understand, as far as I can see.
Yeah, seriously, I think that's a good counterpoint also, just in the, like, concept of, like, well, you know, looking at a joint or something like that is bad. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you breathe on the highway,
know,
with traffic and people combusting all kinds of things. Like, what's up with the oil companies being responsible for the stuff that we burn in our cars?
Mm-hmm.
They basically launder that pollution through us when we fill up our tank, and then we just putter around and spew all of that exhaust all over. You know, what about that? What about breathing that, you know?
Yeah.
Or power companies and stuff like that. So I think, you know, there's worse things you could breathe than a joint or something like that. And when you see these refined, these many varieties of painkillers and prescription drugs, and they're, like, highly refined, they're meant to be used under close medical supervision. When you see the markets just being flooded by the drug companies and insurance and that whole healthcare megalith, you see that, and it's that's pretty daunting, because then it, you know, things get used for unintended purposes, and you get these kids strung out or, like, whatever, messed up, dead, whatever it is,
mm-hmm,
on something that comes from a machine. You know, it's a big industrial synthetic drug thing going on. I don't know, it's something that's like a plant that, you know, has good protein. I don't know, that pales in comparison. So seeing that movie was eye opening. I was like, wow. This is what kids are doing. They're into this, like all this pharmacology and, you know, learning about, you know, synthetic drugs. It just seems a bit much. It's, again, doesn't have like a spiritual, doesn't have like any sort of healthful energy around it. It's just sort of cold and antiseptic, you know.
Absolutely.
It's crazy. I can't imagine being struggling with that. So, I don't know. We need to, like, keep it out of their hands and, you know, maybe...
You can't keep it out of their hands because it's all over the place, but you can get them to at least know something before they make a stupid decision.
Yeah,
know?
I mean...
Not bow to peer pressure.
Yeah, I guess be supportive and, you know, say, like, look, there's other things. Like, maybe change our attitudes towards other things and...
Mm-hmm.
Have
less reasons for wanting to escape,
right,
reality
of that,
in the first place.
Instead of some pills or something like that being, like, you know, what you're turning towards because you're going through... Because you're growing up and struggling a little bit that way? I mean,
mm-hmm,
it's a sad thing. So I wouldn't wish that kind of addiction on anybody. So.
No, definitely
gotta be responsible when you're ingesting or using anything, you know. Be safe and be good.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Take care of yourself and those around you. It's really, yep. really important. So that answers my question, what it is you're eating, when I was introducing you. That was a good 20 minutes ago, and we've we can basically simply ask a single question and fill lots of time by... we had not planned on talking about any of this.
Yeah, well, yes.
That's the magic of radio. And you can become part of the magic of radio, too, by calling us. We'll take phone calls in just a little bit, 631-632-WUSB, 631-632-9872. But, you know, there's other news out there besides what we're talking about here. I just found out that they're going to be broadcasting the Curiosity landing, that's the Mars rover. They're going to be broadcasting it live in Times Square. Yeah, they're going to be broadcasting it live in Times Square next Sunday night. I didn't know it was this soon, actually.
I did.
Yeah, well, did you know it was this Sunday night that it was going to happen?
Yes.
Okay. You knew that August is tomorrow? You know that, too? Because I didn't know that. I just found that out as well.
Man, I have to...
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you got to do a lot of things. NASA's biggest Mars rover landing yet is about to hit Broadway, which is kind of clever there. And it is the biggest Mars rover landing yet. There's a film somewhere. Where is that film? Somewhere on you're writing notes to yourself on your hand.
Yeah, I gotta remember something.
Okay. There's a film someplace that basically has no words. It just shows what this. What this rover will do from where it leaves Earth to where it lands on Mars and what happens afterwards. It's really fascinating, very interesting to see that happen. The film alone is worthy of note, let alone what they're actually doing on Mars. New Yorkers who hope to see the August 5th/6th landing, because it's late at night, of NASA's huge Mars rover Curiosity alongside like-minded space fans and other confused tourists can head to Times Square on Sunday night to catch the rover's touchdown on the red planet live on a giant LED television screen. Let me tell you, if you've never been to New Year's Eve in Times Square and dealt with all the pandemonium and craziness that happens once a year where millions of people gather and there's all kinds of festivity and chaos and police presence like you would not believe, well, this is the closest that you might get to it, coming there on Sunday night and having a few people standing around looking at a TV set. It's similar. It's about the same time of day, so, yeah, why not?
Do you think anybody's... No one's going to even notice.
You really think so? It's going to run from 11:30 p.m. to 4 a.m. on Monday. The exact time of landing... Okay, Kyle, do you know the exact time of landing? You know so much? It just scrolled off the screen, so you can't look to the screen for rescue. Somewhere else.
12:30.
Well, okay, you know what? If you were in Central Time, you'd be right. 1:31 a.m. Eastern Time. I don't know why you're in Central Time, but yes, that is correct. It'll be late Monday night at the Rover's California-based mission. Wait a minute. How could it be late Monday night if it's happening Sunday night? We're reading this on MSNBC. Apparently, they don't understand that the international dateline does not run through America. It'll be late Sunday night at the Rover's California-based Mission Control Room, not Monday night. It's impossible. It'll be Sunday night also in New York when it begins, but Monday morning when they actually land.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of cool. What's this rover going to do? What's so special about it?
It's a one-ton... automobile size robot with some really nice cameras, so it's gonna be like high resolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a laser and some kind of spectrometer, so it can look at materials right while it's there. It doesn't have to like retrieve them and bring them back. And it's got all kinds of other sensors and fun stuff. It's also nuclear powered.
Okay, all right.
And it's gonna be lowered. It will finally touch down. It'll be lowered from a crane, a space crane.
Is there a space crane just installed on Mars to do this?
No. It's part of the payload that's actually flying there right now.
Uh-huh.
It'll jettison its heat shield, and then after it enters the atmosphere, but the atmosphere is so thin on Mars that it will eventually, it won't really be slowing, but it will reach a certain speed, and it has a like supersonic parachute that'll slow it down even more, but it'll still be going like 100 kilometers an hour or something like that, and then so some rockets will fire and that'll slow it down to sort of hovering, And then it'll be lowered by a crane onto the surface, and then that, as soon as it detaches, the crane will fly off so that it doesn't hit it or dust, so dust doesn't, like, interfere with the sensors and stuff.
I see that in the video. I see it, you know, flying off into the distance. Where is it going?
I don't know. Is it just going to crash, or maybe they have parachutes for it, too?
It looks like it's going someplace, like it has another mission.
It flies off. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. No, it's a really good video.
The whole thing is going to take, like, 5 or 7 minutes, I hear. So it's pretty cool. It's, like, all basically automated, and it's going to be really exciting that we're basically landing on Mars yet again. And so this thing is 1 ton, and the rover just, it's going to have more power, obviously, because it's got a nuclear power plant. So things like, you know, shade and not having solar panels charged, I don't think those are going to be as much of an issue. So it's going to be probably a little bit more active, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically exploring a mountain or a crater of some sort. That's why it's landing where it is.
So okay.
That's about as much as I know.
Well, it's going to be fascinating just watching this, and I hope a lot of people get excited about it, because looking to the heavens, I think, is so inspirational. We always see something interesting whenever we do that.
It takes time, but you really should. You got to look up. It takes time. Sometimes the stars are behind clouds. You got to look a little bit. You know, you got to stand there and let your eyes adjust, but they're there. The heavens are there.
And you'll see satellites. You always spot satellites.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that.
You're very good at that.
Yeah, I'm a good spotter in general, mm-hmm. Looking up. And I don't know, I like looking up, and I feel imaginative. I feel a connection to the universe.
We were looking up the other day, and you were spotting planes. We were driving down the LIE, and you were spotting planes on their way to LaGuardia.
Yeah,
and I was asking, okay, Kyle, what kind of plane is that? And you would tell me, it's still just a dot in the distance, but you're able to say, yeah, that's a, you know, an AK-47 or whatever they're
MD-80.
Called.
MD-80.
That's it, yeah. And then I said, okay, Kyle, a wise guy, what airline is it? And you got that right, too. You'd say U.S. Air or United or whatever it was. Yeah. And then I realized I really should be watching the road instead of the sky. But it's still fascinating if you do it safely, and there's all kinds of things to
yeah, I'm pretty good at recognizing planes.
Yeah, yeah, so. Cars too. You can do it with cars. That's good for you.
It's just, yeah,
you can
cars.
See headlights, and you say, yeah, that's a Mercedes-Benz circa 1986, and diesel engine.
I can do old Benzes, old imports. I'm pretty good at that.
Uh-huh.
American muscle cars, there's a gap there. I'm not into that. Like, vintage muscle cars is not really my thing, but...
All right.
I respect them. You know.
Well, you know, it's also Olympic time. The Olympics are happening right now. I think it's amazing. I like the Olympics. Now, I've spoken out against having the Olympics in New York City in the past, and I'm glad these ones aren't being held in New York City. I don't think we could have pulled it off. I don't think it would have been good for the city. I think London's doing a good job. We went over to the site beforehand, inspected it.
Kicked the tires.
We kicked the tires a bit, and we gave it our thumbs up. Looks like they're doing a pretty good job, and people are getting into it, and that's what it's really all about. And maybe it'll even help their economy. I don't know. There are people who are convinced that it will never help the economy. I think sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. You know, it's something well beyond my knowledge. But I do think that that paying attention to what's going on there is something we should do. It's not something we should reject because, well, you know, Coke and Pepsi have all this interest in it. Yeah, they do. And there's all kinds of crazy things going on. Logo-free zones or things like that. You can't display a logo of a competitor, even if you're just a person walking down a street with a T-shirt that has a competitor's name on it. They're enforcing crazy things like that. There's that. But there's also the fact that there are people all over the world, billions of people, watching gymnasts twirling in the air and doing all kinds of amazing things with their bodies, and getting inspired by that, and just sort of realizing how incredible individual people can be when they train themselves, when they apply themselves to something. And that's really the spirit of the Olympics. Yeah, you can ignore all the corporate nonsense and all the huge amounts of money being flung around. Let's look at the individuals. Look at the beauty of what it is they're doing. And that's what I see when this happens every 4 years.
Yeah, it's really, really beautiful to watch.
Yeah.
I saw some kids playing when we were in the city the other day. And,
yeah.
They were, like, tumbling around. I can't help but imagine that they were inspired to start
They were doing flips on the playground. It was
Round-offs
really
and stuff. Yeah, it was cool.
That one kid was trying to do it. He couldn't do it. But
yeah, one of them didn't really have
it.
He
kept landing on his head. But the thing is, you try, you know, and that's all that really matters. And but NBC is getting a lot of flack because they're not broadcasting it live. Now, you know, we've got the luxury of Canadian TV, so We're watching it on CTV, which is an over-the-air network, and they broadcast pretty much the entire day, live during the day, and then again on tape at night. But you can always turn it on and see something. Now, NBC, no, they don't broadcast anything during the day, just soap operas and their usual commercial crap. At night, they broadcast a very tightly choreographed, mostly focusing on American coverage. They do say, yeah, if you want to watch it live, though, you can connect online, and there's a webcast. You know, I tried that today, and I was told I wasn't authorized to watch it because apparently you have to have a kind of subscription that includes all of their channels on your cable or satellite or whatever, and I didn't pass the test, so I'm just not allowed to see it there. But, you know, I outsmarted them by having Canadian TV, and I can watch whatever I want, whenever I want, as can any Canadian live and for free, and that's how it should be.
Yes. Well, we'll have to go up there and thank them sometime.
I think we should do that. In fact, we're going to thank them with the smart car at some point. We outsmarted the smart car.
Yeah, we fixed that a little bit.
I'm going to get back to the Olympics, but tell us what we did, because it's pretty amazing, actually. We were talking last week, just to keep people up to speed. The car was overheating, but not really overheating. It thought it was overheating, and the computer was basically telling it false information, which would make it not go, because the car won't go if it overheats.
Yeah, it was like popping into some safety mode, but we did the nice safe thing of disconnecting one of the coolant sensors.
Because we knew it wasn't overheating.
Yeah, we checked the fluid levels, and, you know, it was getting up to temperature, the fans in the front were going on, and it seemed like maybe if we disabled something, the system would sort of say, all right, I don't have any data, and let us sort of get away with driving around.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to work out.
I was surprised.
Basically, it wouldn't go into limp mode. It would just sort of bypass it. And it worked out really well. And then we started learning things about this clutch actuator, which is electric.
Well, before you get into that, I just want to impress upon people the drama of you're driving, your dashboard, basically, you have what's known as blobs. They're little, like, you know when you fill in those test forms in high
Scantron.
School? Yeah, Scantron. It's like that, except, you know, you don't have to do the filling in. It fills in for you.
Yes.
And there's five of them going up the right side of the dashboard that indicate
that's your coolant test
that indicates
sensor.
Temperature. There's another five on the other side indicating fuel. So basically, when you start the car, it should be at zero. And what happens is, I think three out of five is normal. Well, what was happening when I was starting the car, it would already be at one, sometimes two. Before I even turned the key, it was saying that the engine was warm. Obviously not true. The car has been sitting for several days. There's something messed up someplace, logically. So what happened was it would keep going up, and then it would hit five, and then after a little while at five, it starts flashing, meaning you're overheating, and then if you really are overheating, the car will shut down. Apparently, it doesn't actually shut down the car. We learned this. We just assumed it was going to shut us down. If you don't do what Kyle did, bypassing the heat sensor, it will go into what you call limp mode, which basically slows you down quite a bit.
Yeah.
By bypassing it, though, all you have on the dashboard are these five flashing lights saying, oh, my God, your engine is melting. Stop immediately. But we blithely ignore that and just keep going, and the car is fine.
Yeah, it seems to be working out just fine. And we drove it around for, like, a whole day, went on kind of a little car trip, and there was some other, like, progress, I guess, between going from, like, the automatic to, like, the semi-automatic manual mode.
Well, there's another problem. Yeah, the other problem
right.
we have was with the gear shifting. It feels like you're being hit by a Mack truck whenever you shift gears.
The clutch actuator is not engaging properly when you cold start it, but it seemed like when we drove it around, it would, like, relearn. And be just fine. Like, it would work. Something with, like, going to neutral and slipping into automatic. And
I did it once. I was panicking, and I said, oh, my God, I'm in neutral, downshifting. I'm going to switch to automatic mode. And I got into a mode, and all of a sudden, the problem was gone. It was shifting beautifully. It was shifting perfectly.
Yeah.
And we made the mistake of going to Shelter Island. We got on the ferry. We returned the car off. And when we turned it back on, it had gone back to not knowing how to shift.
So we're getting more information, and it's cool that, you know, we don't have to worry about the coolant situation because we sort of know what's going on. We just need some better information. We need somebody to test it with a scan tool, and if we don't build a scan tool first, which is not outside the realm of possibility at this point, but
what is a scan tool?
It's for OBD diagnostics, onboard diagnostics. You can buy them at, like, you know, Pet Boys or whatever, Auto Place, and it'll tell you codes, it'll tell you the temperature in real time, different information that your engine, you can basically query your engine for data about, you know, from sensors all over the engine, and It's used a lot in emissions, at least this particular diagnostic system. The newer ones are much more, there's more data coming in real time, and it has more features and other components that it interfaces with. But for yours in particular, a scan tool would be helpful because we could figure out what codes. Like, for instance, by disconnecting the coolant temp sensor, we just gave it no data from that sensor. So instead of, like, it ramping up and doing all the weird stuff that it was doing, we just give it nothing, and it says, hey, I'm freaking out. I don't have a way to get any data.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of bypassed it from going to limp mode. And then
I believe I said at the time, no data is better than bad data.
That's right.
And that is a quote worthy of being framed, I think, because it's true.
Yes, yeah.
And you can apply that to other things as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, so that's why we're going to go up to Canada, because we have to bring the car there and get it fixed once and for all so that none of this happens. And when we do that, we'll thank CTV for having round-the-clock Olympic coverage.
Yeah.
Getting back into the Olympic, I like how I did that, Olympic topic here. This is an interesting story. I don't know if you heard about this one. British police have arrested a teenager suspected of sending an offensive Twitter message to British Olympic diver Tom Daley. Yeah, no, he can. Apparently, you can do that in England. You can arrest somebody for sending an offensive Twitter message.
Okay.
Yeah, officers detained a 17-year-old man at a guest house in the Weymouth area of the county of Dorset in the early hours of Tuesday morning. The unnamed teenager is being questioned on suspicion of malicious communications. That's a thing. Suspicion of malicious communications. They should go on IRC occasionally. They really, no offense to the people in our channel over there, but wow, these guys need to learn that malicious communications is, you know, it's unpleasant. A lot of idiots are out there, but arresting somebody for it, I don't know. That's kind of nuts. Basically, what happened? We found out about this through the British Olympic diver Tom Daley himself. Who, you know, if you're an Olympic diver, stay off Twitter. I mean, focus on what it is you're trying to do. When you're back home, that's the time to get on the internet and start talking to your fans or sending 140 character messages that don't really say anything important. But no, this guy, he retweeted what this other person sent to him. The username is Riley69. He retweeted that shortly after he placed fourth in the men's 10-meter synchronized dive, failing to win a medal. And this is what he said. This is what diver Tom Daley said. After giving it my all, you get idiots sending me this. And then RT, meaning retweet, and saying, Tom Daley, you let your dad down. I hope you know that. Yeah, well, here's the thing. Daley's father died in May of 2011 after a long battle with brain cancer. Now, interesting. But apparently, according to what has come out since, the guy didn't know that when he said that. He just said that you let your dad down, and this guy took it in such a bad way because his dad died fairly recently. Now, the tweet triggered a stream of support and praise for Daley's efforts and disgust at Riley69's message. It snowballed into a campaign to have him banned from Twitter. Yeah, get Riley69 banned was a trending topic on Twitter, as users urged others to retweet the message. It was retweeted more than 12,000 times overnight. Isn't that something? Wake up, Kyle. This is going on. This is happening. This is real. I think it's ridiculous, but... So Riley69, anyway, he posted several apologies on Twitter, claiming he didn't realize Daley's father had died. He said, I didn't know about his dad. I just seen on the news where they mentioned me. In the early hours of the morning, he managed to tweet, I'm going to the police station now to sort this out. I will be back. His last tweet read, good night, everybody. I'm genuinely sorry for what happened today. Just know that I'm actually a really nice person, and I regret what I've said. Police have 24 hours to question him in custody before deciding whether any charges should be filed. You know, that is just the stupidest thing ever. You know, you say something that offends somebody on Twitter and you wind up in the police station.
Yeah.
Apparently, British law is kind of weird in regards to things like that. I mean, if you threaten somebody with death or physical harm or things like that, then you can look into it as, you know, threatening and very similar, but just offending people, saying things that might be insensitive. Again, go on IRC. Learn what it's really like.
Or how about IRL?
In real life, do you really want, yeah, I guess, you know, walk around and get some sunlight?
We always say things, you know. People say things they don't mean sometimes. They say things that are insensitive. They say things without information.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. People say things and they don't know anything about it. They say something stupid, and you know, then somebody else flies off the handle. I think that happened to me last week. You know, somebody was talking to me. They didn't know what the heck they were talking about. And I got in their face. I was so fuming mad I couldn't even put intelligible words together. I just was just disgusted.
Uh-huh.
And it was a bad situation. And I, you know, thought about it, and I could have handled it. I could have laid out some arguments and all that. But in the moment, when things get to you, you know, you in the heat of that, you do things regrettably, you know, maybe you don't handle it as good. You know, people are human.
But they're still words, you know, and you got to deal with words and realize they're just words.
Yeah.
And move on. And not,
right,
not,
but you don't get that opportunity when it's right there in text,
mm-hmm.
on some platform like Twitter. It's, you know, someone can easily, you know, make that part of their inbox of activities for, you know, yeah, I'm going to take this to the, all the way to the top or the station or whatever. It's like so silly. It doesn't get treated like words or you know, in context. It gets text itself.
Guess we want another medal.
Text itself is portable.
Right.
You know, language is just something you hear, you heard. Conversation, that's different, you know, and you're allowed to be emotional and to have that in real life, but when it's portable, it becomes, you know, you can copy it, you can put it in a police report, you can, you know, create a court case around it, you know, you get all this seriousness out of something that might not, you know, and that might not have been given the chance to just be a stupid comment, you know.
But yeah, stupid comments, you know.
Boy, that, yeah, on the internet, really?
Yeah, that does happen. That. It does happen. I just, you know, the seriousness of which people treat certain things. I've seen people treat IRC very seriously, too. And you just have to realize it's not real. It's just basically people that think they have a cloak of anonymity of some sort spouting off. And unless you have something else that indicates that there is something real going on, treat it as such. And especially with things like Twitter, where basically people say things just to get attention, and any social commentary site. I mean, I'm always railing against all these message boards that newspapers and media companies feel they have to have, and because I think it really brings down the conversation, and it basically elevates anyone with a big mouth and stupid things to say to the same level as somebody who really knows what they're talking about, and I don't see the reason why that's necessary. But at the same time, no matter how stupid somebody is, they're just being a stupid person. That's not a crime. In fact, in some places, that's a goal. And unfortunately, it's all around us. But that's not the way to handle it.
Yeah, right. Definitely. And you can't remove your foot from your mouth either. It's just
no.
Takes that fun out of it.
Yeah, exactly. You hear about this with the American flags on the moon? This is a story.
I've heard about all kinds of debris on the moon. And how you have to, like, have a perimeter for anybody, like, going to the moon. They have to stay away from relics that are on the moon that
there
were from
relics.
Previous missions, including garbage and stuff.
Well, 5 out of the 6 flags that were put up by crews from the Apollo spacecraft during the 1960s and 1970s are still standing on the moon's surface. They've somehow determined this. NASA's Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter camera captured the shadows cast by the flags as the moon's position changes relative to the sun. I guess they sent something up there, Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter Camera. It sounds like something that's orbiting the moon.
Right? Yes.
So they actually sent something back up there. That's good. Good for NASA, finally. Let's put things up there.
The LROC.
And, yeah, and we know now, that's what it's called, the LROC. We know now that the flags are still up, and it's a really good telescope that can see that. From the LROC images, it is now certain that the American flags are still standing and casting shadows at all the sites except Apollo 11. Yeah, the one, you know, Neil Armstrong, one small step, and all that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not up there for some reason. Now, that Apollo 11 flag was planted by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin during the first moon landing in 1969. And guess what happened? And you don't hear about this very often. Buzz Aldrin reported that the flag was blown over by the exhaust from the ascent engine during liftoff of Apollo 11.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we knocked down our own flag when we were leaving. I mean, if that doesn't say America all over it, I don't know what does.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, what they've learned, or they think, anyway, that the flags are still up, but they're no longer red, white, and blue. After decades of exposure to heat, cold, and light, the flag's colors are likely to have faded to white, the color of surrender. And that's the first thing the aliens are going to see when they head towards Earth. White flags waving in the lunar sky.
Mm-hmm.
So flag raising was a symbolic gesture, though. The U.S. was a signatory to a 1967 U.N. treaty forbidding nations from claiming territory on the moon or other celestial bodies. So, that wasn't what that meant. NASA at one point considered planting a U.N. flag on behalf of humanity, but eventually thought that was a bad idea and put the American flag up instead.
Yeah.
That's the story of the flags on the moon. How about landslides on Saturn's moon, Iapetus? Yeah, they could help provide clues to similar movements of material on Earth. Scientists studying the icy satellite have determined that flash heating could cause falling ice to travel 10 to 15 times farther than previously expected on Iapetus. That's how I'm going to say it from now on, Iapetus. Extended landslides can be found on Mars and Earth, but are more likely to be composed of rock than ice. Despite the differences in materials, scientists believe there could be a link between the long, tumbling debris on all three bodies. We think there's more likely a common mechanism for all of this, and we want to be able to explain all of the observations, said scientist Kelsey Singer. Giant landslides stretching as far as 50 miles litter the surface of Iapetus. They identified 30 such displacements by studying images taken by NASA's Cassini spacecraft. If you want to know something about Iapetus, I'm sure some people do, and that's our heavenly body of the week, by the way, Iapetus, composed almost entirely of ice. Iapetus already stands out from other moons. Most moons have, most of the system has rocky mantles, metallic cores, and an icy layer on top, but scientists believe Iapetus is composed completely of frozen water. Yeah, so that's this week on Iapetus.
Very cool.
Yeah, and that's pretty much all I've got.
That's a big piece of hail.
It is. It really is. You don't want that landing in your backyard, for sure. Do we have time to get into letters? We only have a couple of minutes left, and we haven't seen the phone lighting up, so we're going to stay in real time and not delay, because
okay.
It's such a pain to go into delay. I could read one letter, I suppose. But,
yeah, why don't you read a letter?
It might open us up to a discussion, which could last a long time.
Okay.
All right. I'll do this one then.
I promise not to discuss anything.
Yeah, let's not. Okay. I was listening to your show from last week. You were saying that we need more gun control legislation. I have three comments about that. First, even in places with tight gun control laws, if someone snaps and has a mental problem, they will go on a frenzy with knives or scissors, like in Japan, and still kill people. Sometimes many people. The answer is not gun control alone. It's having a proper mental health care system where people with problems can get help without stigma or extreme cost. I agree with that.
I agree with that, and I think presidents could take a stand on that and not be, hurting their campaigns.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, at the same time, imagine that guy in the theater running around with scissors. I don't think he'd get very far. You know, he'd hurt some people, but having a semi-automatic machine gun or something, that's... I'm sure I used the wrong phrase again, but... It's something that needs to be addressed because it's out of control.
Assault rifle.
All right, fine. Second, before adding new gun control laws, the U.S. needs to enforce the laws they have. I've bought a gun. I was never asked for ID, and the same is true for many other people I know. The store was supposed to verify that I was never committed for mental illness and to make sure I was not a known criminal, and they didn't. And I've heard this before, too. What does that say? What does that say to all the people that believe that we have enough regulation? And finally, in theory, I support stronger gun control laws, but I think that those laws need to be paired with more accountability for our law enforcement. I used to live in New Orleans, so my view of law enforcement accountability may be tainted. Thanks for a good show. Nancy, thank you for a good letter. Very interesting points raised there.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool to see.
We can have the dialogue. We can discuss these things and come to a common understanding. And I think we all realize that the situation is not good right now, and... what's it going to take to make it better? Not just hold off and keep it the way it is, but make it a better situation. What is that going to take?
Yeah, why are people freaking out? What's the deal?
Yeah, there was some kind of a study. I showed you the graph. I don't have it with me. That showed the number of guns owned per 100. I think in the United States it's 88 guns per 100 people,
mm-hmm.
Which is higher, I think, than almost any other country. But the death rates are higher in other countries, such as Brazil, and I think some countries in Central America and other countries in
Panama,
different parts of the world.
Yeah.
Then you have countries like Canada where there are still not as high a number of guns, but such a minimal number of death by firearms.
Right.
And you realize, yeah, guns are a problem, but they're not the only problem. You can get rid of all the guns, and you're still going to have maniacs running around. So I hear that. I hear that issue, and it all needs to be addressed. You can't not talk about one particular issue and just talk about a different one.
Yeah.
We have to look at them all in context. We're out of time.
Are you kidding?
Yeah.
That flew by.
Are you happy? We're out of time
wild.
Now.
Okay.
Spent all this time talking on the radio, don't have any time for anything else, and now we have to leave. And Kyle, you're going back to Seattle now. Well, not now,
yeah.
But soon, very in a couple of days.
Yes, I'm going to be flying back and going to be back in the Pacific Northwest and, you know, check out some of the evergreens.
Yeah, they're still there from what I heard last.
Yeah.
Apparently NASA has an orbital thing going around this planet, and they verify that.
Yeah.
So that's good. And we'll be hearing from you on the telephonic device, and you'll be back here at some point. And
Yeah, I got to go see. I got to make sure my phone's still working. I probably have some messages and, you know, all kinds of things need to be dusted off and tires kicked. There's a lot of fun stuff going on. So I'll be as active, and I'll call in and report what's new from the Pacific Northwest.
And we had a ton of fun here. We had a great conference that we were a part of and made some history. And
yeah, I think we're unpacked, organized. We're going to start looking at what's next.
Exactly. Well, what's next on this station is Finn, so stay tuned for that. This is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. We'll see you next week. Have a good night.
I'm sick.